acceptance. Louise crept out of Poppy's hospital room a little before 9 the next morning. She felt like garbage, but she had too much to do. She needed to see the house. She needed to make sure. As she pulled up in front of the house, a golden retriever charged past her, running down the block with something floppy and brightly colored in its mouth. And it took her sluggish brain a minute to realize it was one of her mom's puppets. Louise hauled herself out of her car and walked across the yard. The police were gone, but they'd left yellow crime scene tape behind, tied to the columns on the front porch and wrapped around the side gate. Louise climbed the fence, careful not to tear the tape, and looked at the wreckage in the backyard. Her mom's puppets lay everywhere. Multicolored rags torn to shreds and strewn from one end of the muddy yard to the other. The rain had ruined them. The police and paramedics had walked on them all night and destroyed them beyond repair. Some had been ground into the mud. Others had been eviscerated, their scraps and fluff blowing into drifts. The biggest pile of them lay face down a few feet from the hole that she and Spider had dug. The police had expanded the hole, turning it into a vast pit. Everything her mom had built, everything she had spent her life creating, everything that meant so much to her, it was gone. The rain and mud and the feet of strangers had destroyed it all. The puppets had been her mom's life. Pupkin had been her mom's life. And now they were gone, and so was her mother. Louise began to cry. She cried because at last it hit her that time only moves in one direction, no matter how hard we wish it wasn't so. She heard Pupkin protest inside her head.
Not fair.
No. Not fair.
Excuse me?
Painfully, every joint rusty and stiff, tears streaming down her face, Louise turned. A man in a black puffy vest and athleisure pants stood on the other side of the fence, holding out his arm. From it, one of her mom's ruined puppets dangled. Louise recognized Meow Meow.
I don't mean to be rude, but your trash is all over my yard.
Louise vaguely recognized him as one of the new people living in the Mitchells' old house. They were a finance family from Westchester, or a tech family from the Bay Area, or some career family from someplace like that. She gave him a smile through her tear-streaked face.
Oh, I'm dealing with it right now.
Louise pulled out her phone, found the number in her call list, and tapped it once.
Mr. Gutter, this is Louise Joyner from the... Yes. Yes, it is early. I'm afraid we got off on the wrong foot before. We definitely want you to come back as soon as possible. That'd be great. And one other thing. Do you do yards?
As the hospital cleared Poppy to go home, Louise went down to the car and brought back a duffel bag. She sat on the edge of Poppy's bed, holding it in her lap.
How do you feel?
Poppy coughed and nodded at the same time. Louise put one hand on Poppy's forehead, because that's what her mom had always done for her whenever she'd been sick. The doctor said Poppy's lungs were clear, and there was a course of oral antibiotics. And Louise had no idea what Poppy remembered, but going home was the first step.
Are you excited?
Back to San Francisco?
Back to San Francisco.
Then she unzipped the duffel bag and reached in and pulled out Hedgy Hockey and set him on the bed facing Poppy. Then she pulled out Red Rabbit and Buffalo Jones and Dumbo and lined them all up, too.
These are some friends I had when I was your age.
Poppy's eyes locked onto them.
What are their names?
Louise introduced Poppy to her childhood friends. She'd found them in the house, hiding in her bedroom, huddled underneath her bed. She didn't remember seeing them that night in the house, and she didn't think they ever could have done anything to hurt her, and they looked so frightened and alone. She'd gotten them cleaned, spiritually by Barb, who said there was nothing to worry about, physically by Sea Island Suds.
They're your friends now.
Poppy cautiously reached out and pulled Red Rabbit over to her by one ear and tucked him against her stomach. Then she reached for Buffalo Jones.
But you'll have to take care of them. They've never been to a city as big as San Francisco before.
When Louise was little, her mom had loved her without reservation, without hesitation. But Louise wasn't born knowing how to do that for someone else. These stuffed animals were how she had first learned to love something that couldn't always love you back. They were how she had learned to take care of something that relied on you completely. They had been training wheels for her heart, and now it was Poppy's turn. It was up to Poppy to keep them clean and loved and warm, and one day, maybe Poppy would pass them on to her children, or her godchildren, or her best friend's children. Or maybe she wouldn't. Maybe she'd get tired of them before then. But no matter what, Louise had done her part. It was up to Poppy now. They had Uncle Freddy's funeral in October. Louise and Poppy flew in for it and stayed with Aunt Honey, which thrilled her to no end. At first, Louise thought Aunt Honey's warmth was all an act. So she waited until one night after Poppy had gone to bed and poured them both another glass of wine.
I want to apologize for what happened in your room that night at the hospital.
No. I don't even remember. I was doped up on drugs. Let's talk about something that's actually interesting. Do you think Constance is having another baby? Does she look pregnant to you? She's not drinking.
It had taken forever to get a judge to sign an exhumation license to dig up Freddie's empty casket and rebury his remains. And there had been a lot of other legal hurdles to clear. But finally, 68 years after his death, the Joyner-Cook Cannon family gathered in the graveyard at Sturr's and laid Uncle Freddy to rest beside his sister. They gathered around the green open-sided tent in the cemetery, standing by the newly dug hole in the family plot, and everyone had a blast. Aunt Gail led the prayers, and Mark hired a bagpiper to play Amazing Grace for reasons no one could comprehend. And even Barb showed up.
Oh, look at her. She's like a delicious miniature muffin.
Barb lifted Poppy in her arms and mashed her cheeks together.
I wanna eat her up.
Louise could tell Poppy had no clue who Barb was, but she liked the attention, so she accepted the hug and treated her like another aunt. It reminded Louise of the way her mom had so easily accepted other people's attention. She remembered how at ease that had always seemed to make them feel. Each of them threw a handful of dirt on Freddy's coffin, and somehow Brody managed to slip and fall in the hole, although fortunately he didn't break anything. And as the service wound down, it turned out that Constance happened to have a bunch of cans of hard seltzer and two bottles of wine in her minivan, and people poured one into the other, and the funeral home didn't seem to be telling them to leave, so they stood around the open grave and kept talking. Mercy told Louise about a precious little house she couldn't move for love or money because the sellers were in denial that their attic was full of bats. Barb and Aunt Gail read headstones and gossiped about dead people they knew. Constance and Mark got into an argument about evolution while Poppy played hide-and-seek in the tombstones with the other kids. She was finally old enough to play with Constance and Mercy's younger ones. And as their shrieks rang out over the dead bodies lying underground, and Aunt Honey began to deliver a soliloquy about what Freddy had been like as a child, Louise slipped away from the tent and stood over to one side, watching her family.
Hey.
Mark came toward her, holding out an extra can of hard seltzer. She took it.
Hey. You feeling okay?
He looked pale and clammy. Their night at the house had traumatized his surgical site, and the doctors had had to shave down some damaged tissue in his right arm. It hadn't been fun.
It hurts just a little. And by little, I mean a lot, and also all the time.
They stood next to each other, watching Aunt Honey hold court, listening to the kids playing among the graves.
Do you think he's happy?
Freddy? After all that, he'd better be.
And Pupkin?
Over by the tent, Aunt Honey cackled loudly, and everyone standing in the circle around her laughed.
I hope so.
How are the renovations coming?
Mercy had told them not to expect much from the house. In fact, she told them it probably wouldn't sell for a while.
You find a cadaver in the backyard, suddenly everyone wants to knock $100,000 off the asking price. Maybe we'll find someone who's deaf and blind and doesn't read the newspapers. Or maybe someone from L.A. But I wouldn't get your hopes up that we'll find a real buyer anytime soon.
That hadn't stopped Mark from taking out a loan and starting to renovate. He told Louise he needed something to do, and there wasn't much of a market for one-armed bartenders.
Look, we need to talk about something.
Oh, no. I can't take more bad news. I can't.
Poppy slammed into Louise's legs from behind, face flushed, completely out of breath, panting and laughing.
Are you having a good time?
This is the most fun I've ever had!
Poppy didn't know what to do with all the joy inside her body. It short-circuited her nerve endings. It made her shake. Her hands clenched into fists as she pressed her face against Louise's legs, then she pushed herself away and charged off after her cousins again, arms and legs flailing. Louise watched her go, then turned and faced Mark.
Okay, what is it?
We might have a buyer.
What? How?
Mercy said he's some software guy from Toronto. He doesn't care about the thing with Freddy. He's coming down next week to walk through.
What about the renovation?
That's what I wanted to talk to you about. It's pretty much done.
He stood there like a magician who just completed a trick, waiting for applause. Poppy came around a gravestone too fast and wiped out hard. Louise winced in sympathy, then watched as Poppy picked herself up, grass stains smeared across the knees of her dress, and kept chasing her cousins.
That's great. That's really great. I mean it.
You want to see it?
Something inside her went cold. She saw Mark's face fall.
I don't know. I almost died there, Mark and Poppy. It wasn't a good place for her.
If this guy buys, they're gonna close fast. You may not get another chance.
Do you have pictures?
It's fine.
Louise realized how disappointed he was.
You know what? Let's drive by. If it doesn't bother Poppy, then I'd love to see what you've done.
Louise and Poppy stood in the front hall of the house where Louise grew up, holding hands, taking in the brand new open-plan living space. It smelled like new carpet and fresh paint.
I have very good taste. I mean, Mercy helped, but what you're seeing is mostly my vision.
He looked nervous and proud, and like he really needed her to like it.
I'll admit, it looks nice.
Poppy pulled on her hand and Louise looked down.
Can I go see your room?
Of course. You know where it is?
Poppy nodded, and clutching Red Rabbit to her side, she walked down the hall to Louise's old bedroom.
I feel like some appreciative noises would be in order. I have busted my fucking hump on this renovation.
Louise made appreciative noises over the new, bigger hall bathroom, the hardwood floors in the family space, the wall-to-wall carpet in the bedrooms, the Venetian blinds.
It's super on trend.
He really was good at this. She tried to lay her memories of that last desperate night over these IKEA fixtures and marble countertops, and they wouldn't take. It didn't look like the same house anymore.
Mercy asked if I wanted to help her with another place. I might. I mean, you know, this was kind of fun.
They found Poppy standing in the middle of her parents' old bedroom. Mark had torn out their dad's closet, enlarged the bathroom, and made a bigger walk-in closet. Louise could barely remember how it had looked before.
Everything's gone.
Louise nodded.
It is. And it's never coming back.
And Granny and Grandpa?
They're gone too.
She waited for Poppy's eyes to get teary, for her face to flush, for the beginning of a meltdown.
Oh.
Poppy turned it over in her mind. Then she said,
okay.
She adjusted Red Rabbit and took Louise's hand again. Mark led them to the kitchen and told Louise about sourcing the marble and what a great deal he'd gotten on the stainless steel. Then Poppy had to go to the bathroom and she wanted Mark to take her, so he led her down the hall.
So, one thing we didn't talk about is the new asking price.
Louise's heart stopped. Here it came, the bad news. Mercy had told them everyone would want a discount after Freddy.
What is it?
He told her the number. It was big. Bigger than she'd imagined.
Half of that will be yours. That buys a whole lot of future for Poppy.
It took a minute for Louise to absorb what he'd said.
Thank you. I mean it. This is all you. And it's amazing.
Suddenly, she smelled something behind the paint and new carpet smells. Something hot and toasted. And she wondered if Mark had left the oven on, or if he was doing that thing where you staged a house by baking cookies. But the guy wasn't coming until next week. She inhaled again. It smelled stronger now. It was the smell of baking. It was the smell of stolen baking. She looked around the bare, cold kitchen and saw that the oven was off, and its digital display flashed 12 o'clock to itself over and over again. She felt herself wrapped in the scent of warm butter and hot icing, and she inhaled and let it fill her head. She smelled candied fruit and warm sugar. She smelled yeast. She looked at Mark standing next to her, and he had a strange look on his face, like he was listening to faraway music. He met her eyes.
What?
You know, whenever I used to smell Dad's baking, I always felt like everything was going to be okay.
Hi.
Mark stopped, and then he just stood there, lost in the smell of their dad's cooking. They heard the toilet flush, and Poppy wandered into the room with Red Rabbit.
It smells like cookies.
It does.
She didn't know if it was energy or vibes or ghosts or memories or maybe even her dad sending one final message to the three of them, but it didn't matter. For a little while, for the last time, Mark and Louise stood in the house where they grew up and smelled the scent of their dad's stolen baking in the oven. Finally, Louise looked at Mark.
We should go.
Mark turned to her, looking stricken.
Lulu, everything else was Freddy or Pupkin or whatever, but this, it's actually Dad.
She shook her head.
It's time to go.
He swallowed, then nodded. Then the four of them, Mark, Louise, Poppy, and Red Rabbit, walked out of the house and closed the door behind them. And after a while, the smell of stolen faded away. For Louise, it came and went. Sometimes it wouldn't bother her for years, and sometimes it hit hard. The worst was when she dreamed they were still alive, and it had all been a terrible mistake. In those dreams, she was still 39, and when she got Mark's call, she called home, and this time her dad answered the phone, and she talked to him, and then to her mom, and she would wake up glowing. She'd open her eyes and sit up in bed full of energy and actually reach for her phone, And that's when she'd remember they were dead, and it would hit her all over again, as hard as it did the very first time. When that happened, she felt a deep ache inside her chest, like her rib cage was being split open with an axe. When that happened, she needed to call the only other person who knew how this felt. When that happened, she called her brother.
How to Sell a Haunted House by Grady Hendrix is a graphic audio production. Copyright 2023 Grady Hendrix, all rights reserved. Recorded by arrangement with Berkeley. Production copyright 2025 Graphic Audio LLC, all rights reserved. Unauthorized download and or duplication is prohibited. Adapted for graphic audio and directed by Bradley Foster Smith. Dialogue editing and graphic audio sound design by Jameson Hunt. Narrated by Dawn Ursula. Featuring Laura C. Harris as Louise, Bradley Foster Smith as Mark, Megan Poppy as Poppy, Holly Adams as Nancy, Kelly Baskin as Mercy, Julianne Elliott as Gail, and Rose Elizabeth Supan as Aunt Honey. With additional performances by Jonathan David Bullock, Suling Chan, Stephanie Namath Parker, Danny Gavigan, Matthew Pauly, Todd Schofield, James Konacek, Jerry J. Marshall, Nora Ashradi, Wynn Delano, Emlyn McFarland, Shanta Parasharaman, David Arden Engel, Yasmin Twazon, Matthew Bassett, Rob Morera, Nanette Savard, Richard Rowan, Julie Hoverson, Tatiana Ridgway, James Lewis, Naya DeRusso, Karen Novak, J.W. Roan, Eric Messner, Michael John Casey, Steve Winall, Christopher Walker, Ore Nash, Miroslav Shearer, Jewel Harrison, Andrew Arceus, Oliver Jackson, and Charles Joseph. Theme music and original scoring by Jameson Hunt. Produced by Colleen Delaney, Scott McCormick, David Zitney, Casey Green, and Aaron Coe. Executive producers Angie Cornett, Dwayne Beeman, and Matt Webb. Keep listening to hear a sample clip from Rosarium, Box of Bones, Volume 1, by Ayize Jama Everett and John Jennings.
Y'all's own damn fault for provoking Donnie and him. Expect you to know better, Slim Jim. And keep my niece from harm.
Ain't Jim done me harm. He the only one stood by me. Broke his only possession over that cracker's head. For all the good it did.
Trust in the justice of the Lord, for he judgeth all souls equally.
Amen.
You stay praying to the Lord and see how that worked for you. I got my own justice coming.
Now, don't you bring none of that New Orleans voodoo here.
How you mean, Gage?
Let's just say I brought some of my mama's magic with me.
Not in this house!
What's that?
That's my vengeance in the form of the Box of Bones.
That's the end of your natural soul if you open that box.
Devil, take my soul if that's what it takes to pay back them crack-ass hillbillies.
Gage, wait! I can't keep up.
That'd probably be better.
What you mean? I thought...
Feel that? Feel that hate? That rage? That darkness? That's some old vexation so old and twisted it makes its own hoodoo.
Gage, please! I ain't done nothing!
I know, Jim. Now stay away from me, because I'm about to do something you don't want no part of. What I'm fitting to let loose ain't good at telling friend from foe.
Truth of it, I'm ashamed to admit now, is that I would have run and kept running on my broken leg if I could. But the briefest touch of that box, it made me feel something. Something twisted and deep and wrong. But it was also seductive. It wanted me to find it, to follow it. I wasn't as quick, wasn't as wrong as Gage, but I was caught up in the box of bones just as much as she was.
You have been listening to a sample from Rosarium, Box of Bones, Volume 1. Now please enjoy another sample from The Southern Book Club's Guide to Slaying Vampires by Grady Hendrix.
Patricia scanned the damage with her flashlight. Napkins, coffee filters, apple cores, toaster strudel boxes, wadded Kleenex, folded blue incontinence pads. Either raccoons or really big marsh rats had gotten into the trash and torn everything to shreds. The biggest white bag had been dragged into the narrow alley between the blank brick wall of their house and the stand of bamboo marking the boundary of the Clark's house behind them. She heard the slurping sound of someone eating jelly as she flicked her flashlight up to the bag. It was cloth, actually, and not white, but pale pink, and covered in rosebuds. It had dirty bare feet, and when the flashlight beam struck it, it turned its face into the light. The harsh white beam picked out every detail with unforgiving clarity. The old woman squatted in a pink nightgown, cheeks smeared with red jam, lips bristling with stiff black hairs, chin quivering with clear slime. She crouched over something dark in her lap. Patricia saw a raccoon's nearly severed head hanging upside down over the old woman's knees, tongue sticking out between its bared fangs. The old woman reached one gory hand into its open belly and scooped up a fistful of translucent guts. She raised that hand, shiny with animal grease, to her mouth and gnawed on the pale lavender tube of intestines while squinting into the flashlight beam.
May I help you?
Patricia didn't know what else to say. The old woman slowed her gnawing and sniffed the air like an animal. The heavy smell of fresh feces, the suffocating stench of spilled garbage, the iron reek of the raccoon's blood forced their way up Patricia's nose. She gagged, stepping backward, and her heel hit something soft. She sat down suddenly in the pile of greasy white bags, struggling to get up, trying to keep the flashlight beam centered on the old woman, because she was safe as long as she could see the old woman. But the old woman was halfway to her already, crawling on her hands and knees, coming too fast, plowing through the spilled garbage, dragging the raccoon's forgotten corpse along by its head.
Oh, no, 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 no!
Thanks for listening to this Graphic Audio production. Graphic Audio has over 1,700 titles to choose from. Listen to over 225 binge-worthy series. We feature titles in genres like science fiction, fantasy, romantasy, westerns, mystery thrillers, comics, and more. Check out our exclusive series such as Deathlands, Rogue Angel, Outlanders, Tangent Knights, and Agent of Exiles, which are only available in our dramatized adaptation format. Experience a radically different type of audiobook produced with a full cast, sound effects, and cinematic music. Listen to a movie in your mind, on the go, anytime, anywhere. Our dramatized adaptation titles are available at all major audiobook retailers and platforms. Sign up for our email newsletter for the latest updates and new releases. Follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, YouTube, and other social media platforms. For more information and samples of all our titles, visit our website at graphicaudio.net.